Skolick and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golick. Mike Golick Jr., represented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests join us on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Obviously, the biggest story of the day is the article that came out from the Washington Post yesterday. And that that article dives into 15 women that are alleging sexual misconduct by former Washington football team employees, one on the record, Emily Applegate, 14 others not on the record. It should be noted.
The reason they're not on the record, yes.
As pointed out in the article, that many of the women that weren't didn't feel comfortable speaking freely had non-disclosure agreements that they feared retribution legally if they say anything because of those agreements. The Post asked the team if they could be released from those agreements to speak on the record. The team said no. So there's some level of protection going on here still, even through all of this legally. And it raises questions, gentlemen, of how we got here and what's wrong with the culture. And most importantly, frankly, how to fix it.
You know, again, we had Liz Clark on who wrote this article with Will Hobson. And it was interesting, she said, because they knew what was coming out. The football franchise knew what was coming out. And basically, they didn't respond, saying that we don't respond to hearsay. Yet, the response was firing of people, you know, because they knew what was coming out. So they obviously were responding to that. And for those that may not know, these are basically five of the takeaways. The team environment tolerated frequent sexual harassment and verbal abuse of female employees. Washington's NFL team didn't have the proper structure to handle harassment complaints. Snyder belittled executives, helping to create an uncomfortable workplace for everyone. The team has hired an outside attorney to study the franchise culture, and the NFL has now come out with a statement saying after the investigation, they will speak with the outside attorney here on what they found in that investigation. And then Alex Santos, Richard Mann II, and Larry Michael all left the team after complaints were raised. So a lot of this is going to, and I mean, it's the sexual harassment of talking about their bodies, physically a reporter being pinched in the butt, wear low-cut blouses, wear high skirts. I mean, just horrific that, again, I mean, maybe I'm too commonsensical about this thing, but how hard is it to drop the hammer whenever you hear anything about that from the top on down, to know in your company that that will not be tolerated? And on sniff one of it, you look into it, and if it's true, the hammer is dropped. And it's like, this is unacceptable. You will lose your job if this is done. I mean, I it seems so simple to take care of a problem that has been pervasive for decades to now say, these are professionals trying to do their jobs. You know, quit. I mean, it really does kind of blow my mind that we're still in this point where these guys feel empowered enough to not do it once, but not do it twice, but text about it, you know, converse with others about it, that it can be that freely done that so many people know about it and nothing is done about it. That blows my mind.
Yeah, I say this to be very complimentary. It's because you're a fundamentally decent human being. And what we're seeing in this situation is that decency is at a scarce commodity in a lot of these places where you feel entitled to doing things a certain way, where you look at women and don't see an equal. You see something that you're entitled to basically do and say whatever you want to. And so it's like, it's a fundamental difference in mentality, because if you had front offices populated with people that thought like the way you just described, none of this would be happening because people would be held accountable. Instead, what you've got is a system that's so pervasive, and Liz Clark brought this up, that there's not even a competent or structured HR department in here to handle this stuff. So what does that say? If you don't have something like that in place, it's because you either don't believe it's a problem, don't believe what's happening is wrong, or you don't care enough to even try and fix it if you're willing to admit that there's a problem.
Especially when you take out the football aspect of this. If you just look at a corporation, and if I tell you that this is a corporation with two separate headquarters, essentially located in close proximity, but two headquarters that's generally worth about $3.4 billion, what other company worth $3.4 billion is not going to have an HR department? I mean, that's sort of, as much as I think people think of football teams sometimes as being small organizations or family-run organizations or however we look at certain teams, when you're talking about billion-dollar entities, there has to be the same structure in place that would belong for any other company that is of that size and status.
So you look at And everybody's going to look at Dan Snyder because Dan Snyder owns 60% of the team. He's the face of Washington football. He bought that team in 99. And, oh, by the way, from the on the field where this guy has spent money, and unfortunately it hasn't been spent very well since he bought the team, it's a fifth worst record in the NFL, nine last place finishes in the NFC East, last place. The last playoff win was in 2005, bottom five in home attendance capacity. So they in six of the last seven seasons. So that's on the football side. And you're waiting to hear, everybody now is waiting to hear from Dan Snyder. Because when this went on with the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban, you know, while said, I didn't know a lot of this was going on, I'm the Dallas Mavericks. This is my team. So I need to take responsibility for this and make sure something is done about this. All we've really heard from is Ron Rivera. And how about Ron Rivera? Ron Rivera leaving Carolina, where Jerry Richardson is basically sells off the team because of what is said against him. And he goes to a Washington team who is rid of its racist nickname, and he is involved in that, in getting a new one. And now the sexual harassment that has gone on there, he has been the guy talking about that. So where is Dan Snyder in all of this, and when are we going to hear from the man who's the majority, you know, owner of this team?
Yeah, and instead, I think, like you've pointed out, the response has been, you know, throw lawyers at the situation, firing people this week, putting out Monday what seems now to even be even more a thinly veiled attempt to try and mask what was coming out, and saying, we're going to change the team name. We haven't figured it out yet. We're not actually changing it in this moment. We're just telling you we're going to do it. Like, all of it points to someone who would rather try and distract from the situation than address what has gone on in here. Because again, there's either too much cowardice to actually admit there's a problem and address it, or people that don't believe it's enough of a problem to even warrant addressing at all.
That's why I think it's at least a fair comparison to have a conversation about the Dallas situation in the NBA with the Mavericks and Mark Cuban. Part of what Mark Cuban has generated, whether it's because he's a likable guy in Shark Tank or whether it's because he's a likable guy to many people, is some level of benefit of the doubt, right? There is a spot where when people heard the allegations of what was happening in the Dallas organization, I feel like it was met with a, how could this be happening? When we hear the allegations from the Washington football team, it's much different. I'm not surprised this is happening. I also look at the reaction of Mark Cuban in the moment, who came out and said essentially, hey, I didn't know about this, but this is my responsibility and I'm going to get it fixed. We haven't heard that from Dan Snyder. And so the real question becomes, will the NFL give some level of accountability to Dan Snyder to force him to at least come out and say something or acknowledge something in the process?
How laughable is it that the man that used to run that team in Bruce Allen actually said, we have a damn fine culture here? I mean, how laughable to even say that. And there might be one thing to want not give the air that you don't, but to go that far and say it's a damn fine culture just blows my mind. And I really wonder, because remember when Ron Rivera took the job, we all said, you know what, he was a hot commodity and he jumped that job pretty quickly. Why not wait and see what the landscape was? You really wonder, I do wonder, and I don't think I'll ever say it publicly or while he's coaching there, in a private moment, if he is now like, boy, I kind of wish I had that one to do over again.
Yeah,
instead of being stuck in this hot mess.
Yeah, I'm sure the bill of goods you were sold is not nearly what you came there and ended up buying. And you mentioned before the lack of success in the football side, and this was something that Liz Clark said that I think is worth noting, is these things are connected. Frank Verducci was an offensive line coach of mine, and he always said, especially for someone playing like the center position where you have to communicate, where so much is on your plate, he goes, I can't feel comfortable putting out someone there to play that position who doesn't have a clean house, who doesn't have their life in order in a way that's defensible, because there's so much asked of you in that spot. It's a leadership position. I need leaders to be people I can count on in all facets of their life in this situation. That's what's going on here. Like, when you've got a house that looks like the one that Washington's built here, where the foundation is this cracked, broken mess of misogyny and racism, well, then all of a sudden, how can you expect anything good or fruitful to grow from that? And that's not to say that we've seen this problem, as we've heard from plenty of the women that work around this industry, is widespread enough to where I'm sure it exists in some of the organizations we think are good too. But when you lump all of the problems that are around the Washington football team together, and then you add this to it as a part of it, there's no wonder why it's been such a dumpster fire of a team.
Bruce Allen is somebody that was largely, by his role in charge of the culture as well, He's somebody that did come out and defend the culture a year ago, and he's somebody that refused to comment on the record in the article, small and cowardly by a person that helped let this happen. At least he needs to come out and justify what his role was in it and why he allowed it to be what it was. Well, much more to break down on this, obviously, but there are other things we want to get into over the course of the day.
You mean like Tiger Woods?
Like, well, I mean, come on. It's a day. There's golf. We got Tiger back. Yeah. I mean, there is some excitement on it. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo with Mike Golic and Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and we're going to hop over to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line because Tiger is back in action. We are seeing a little of it over the course of the weekend. We're starting to get excited. So ESPN reporter Tom Rinaldi joins us now. Tom, thank you so much for your time. Hope you and yours are safe first and foremost. So give me a sense, now that you've been around, what it looks like with Tiger without the roar, of how it feels to be in that presence and not have the same crowd.
Good morning, guys. You know, I've been walking rounds with Tiger Woods for almost the better part of 20 years to date myself. And to tell you that yesterday was a round unlike any that certainly I'd seen, doesn't begin to cover it. How about the fact that when he was introduced, they still make the announcement now on the tee, Tiger Woods, there's not a single clap, not a single acknowledgement from anybody. After he made the opening birdie, he was walking to the second tee box, and a man over the fence from his backyard looked at Tiger and said, "Great birdie." And Tiger looked right at him and said, "Thank you." Almost as if they were having a conversation. It was just very, very strange. He ended the day really well with a 14-foot birdie putt. You can only imagine in the amphitheater here at Muirfield Village what that would have been like. And instead, you could hear the ball fall into the hole. It was remarkable.
It really is amazing. And again, it's a tournament he has won five times. So how about the air of just the tournament now? We're kind of getting used to this now, Tom, quite honestly. No fans being around. I know they wanted to start putting some in at this tournament, but I think they're going to wait a little further. Do the players, I would imagine at this point, feel pretty comfortable with this, getting into this new routine?
I think so, Mike. I think you're right. This was supposed to be the first tournament with fans permitted to come back, but with the spikes and the change in what's happening with COVID around the country and here in Ohio, they decided no fans, no pro-am, and the PGA Tour said no fans for the rest of this season. But Tiger, interestingly, was asked about how he felt without fans. And I thought the words that he used were pretty striking, where he said he felt the same eagerness, edginess, anxiousness that he always feels. And I think players have noticed how unusual this is, but they're acclimating to it pretty quickly. Logistically, things are a bit easier, but let's face facts, guys. And you know, Mike, that there is a juice that comes from making a great play and having a crowd react, and having no reaction, there's a void there, and having to work through that. It's interesting.
And Tom, there's a juice that comes with your first foray back into this after the kind of layoff that Tiger's had. And so I'm curious, and my dad brought this up earlier, how we expect him to fare with the quick turnaround today, or teeing off earlier in the day today after teeing off
in like 3 minutes
yesterday. Yeah. Very soon on here. So what that reaction might be like for someone like Tiger, who's dealing with the physical limitations at times that he has.
I think that's a great point, Junior. It really is. I'll tell you two things that help him with that tight turnaround. One certainly is warm and humid weather. If we begin to talk about tight turnarounds, and we're talking about Augusta National and the Masters in November when it could be cool and damp, etc., that would be a completely different situation. But the warm and humid conditions help him, number one. Number two, he was asked about it directly, and he said he didn't foresee having any issues. You know, Tiger is almost a lifelong insomniac. He gets up very, very early, virtually every day. And believe me, I'm sure he was up very, very early. He was out here early, went through sort of an additional round of chipping and putting, even beyond his typical warm-up, about to go off presently, off 10-tee right now, alongside Koepka and Rory. What a grouping that is, with no fans following them.
Well, and that's a great, that leads me, Tom, to the next thought. When you've got that grouping together, what's their conversation been like while they're playing as they go through this process?
It's not only the conversation fits, it's the fact that you can so clearly hear it. You can hear everything that they say to one another. And so you can hear, nice putt, hey, good shot, well done. So essentially, the greatest support that the players have comes from one another in that pairing. And you heard it. You heard some of the conversations about technology in terms of the clubs that they were using, et cetera, the shafts. It's interesting just as you catch these stolen moments between them. I said yesterday, guys, Rory McIlroy is probably the social chairman of that threesome. But it's really interesting to be able to hear the talk between them, even to hear the clubs clang together in Joe Lacava's bag as he walks up a fairway. I know it's been going on here. This is the sixth event back, but it's still pretty striking, certainly from my vantage point.
Tom Rinaldi joining us at the Memorial Tournament here on Golic and Wingo, a tournament that Tiger has won five times. But also the other thing, and this is kind of how we've been comparing it, Tom, back in the day when Sosa and McGuire were having their home run chase, you'd break into their at-bats. Other players would watch them doing batting practice to hit bombs. And I know you're following Tiger around, but I'm wondering if on the practice tee, you're seeing Bryson DeChambeau hit a driver. We've had other golfers say at the driving range at these tournaments, we would stand around and watch. And if you've seen him hit a driver, he had two over 400 yesterday. Just how it sounds when a guy is just knocking the snot out of a ball like that.
So Tiger played alongside Bryson early Wednesday morning. They played nine holes together. And remember, Tiger has very good rapport with so many of the players, even just recently based on his presidency his captaincy of the President's Cup, rather. But Bryson has raised eyebrows, guys, from the very beginning. The mad scientist, the physicist, the guy who has all the same length clubs, the guy whose driver, Mike, has 3 degrees of loft. Think about trying to hit a golf ball with a 3-degree loft face. And yet, he's flying, like you said, two drives in excess of 400. Yet, when you look at listen, he's got great results. He's hitting all of his clubs very, very far. But this particular layout will really challenge him. This is by far the most difficult track that these guys have faced. It looks nothing like it did even a week ago at the workday. And with a wind that was up, it was very challenging yesterday afternoon. We'll see how Bryson does here. I mean, his results have backed up his approach, but this will be a different kind of challenge.
Bryson kind of gave Tiger the old man treatment yesterday when he was talking about him, asking a comment, a lot of back in the days, a lot of the junior golfers on that one. I'm wondering, Tom, you think there's any part of Tiger that kind of wants to remind him who the big fish on the tour is?
So that's a great point, Junior. You're referring to the comment that Bryson made on Wednesday when he referred to Tiger hitting a lengthy drive during their practice round. He said that was good for his age. Yeah. Holy cow. At the death knell for anyone that's a little bit older. And so in a great moment, you talk about the conversation between the guys. On 10, Tiger took out driver, up Kepka, hit a 3-wood, but Tiger was 50 yards in front of anybody else on perfect drive on 10 fairway. And some of the chatter, you can believe it, going to 11 tee box was, hey, not bad for the old man. Not bad for his age. That kind of thing. So believe me, that comment has certainly gotten some legs.
Tom, we appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us. We appreciate the insight, my friend. Most importantly, stay safe. Thanks so much for joining us.
To all three of you guys, please, stay safe and the same. Great to hear you, Fitzy.
Tom Rinaldi joining us. I mean, just the thought, and it's funny because he's talking about how they're teeing off and they're talking to each other, nice shot, nice. All I'm thinking is if it was us playing, it'd be the same words, but the tone would not be so supportive, right?
So I mean,
have the dump button ready.
Who goes out and plays just a round and is nice and complimentary to their playing partners? All we do is rip one another, but, you know, they're obviously professionals, and we know they're going to treat it differently.
I am glad to hear, though, that everyone was aware of what Bryson had to say on that one. Yeah. Like, the fact that that one's making its way into those conversations.
How many golfers had to hear that and just went, ooh, oh,
well,
hey.
Like, that's the thing is, like, everyone, like, you don't get... A wise offensive tackle once said to me, you don't get bonus points for blocking anyone when they're mad. You don't get bonus points for trying to go up against Tiger Woods in a tournament after you ticked him off. Everyone else on the tour had to be like, what are you doing, beefcake?
Mark Schlereth, a former old lineman we've had on just the other day, worked here for years, always used to say when other guys used to talk smack his offensive guys about the defense, he goes, dude, you're writing a check I have to cash. Why are you making the guy I play against incensed because of something you're saying? He says, why would you do that? I don't need that extra on me.
That's the thing. Most offensive linemen, when you're going out there, you got to think about a lot that's going on each play, make a bunch of calls and all that stuff. D linemen can actually get better when they're angry. Like, their job is to destroy. And so if you make them angry, you only make them better at destroying stuff. That is not my goal out there. I was not good enough to willingly tick anyone off and make their job better for me.
I just wonder if today, again, Bryson was one over and Tiger was one under. Tiger just teed off a couple of minutes ago. Where Tiger ends up today going into the weekend, if all of a sudden you may get a little comment in there here or there in his presser about, you know, not bad for an old man, or
please God,
you know,
give us this.
I know, I want it so badly.
I'm just saying, run in your mouth until everybody else has to back it up and only makes them mad. You're describing my 20s, essentially, in every bar I ever went to. I get it. All right, coming up, the Washington Nationals will start their title defense next Thursday. Cole versus Scherzer, but where will it be played? That's a new question. We'll try to get the answer to that. Go Look at Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.
Sometimes it just falls out. I can't help it.
I should tweet that. It's going to be my model for the day, is tweeting this, all of your great nines.
This is the problem, is I basically speak and think in like 140 to 280 characters, which is its own like weird psychological hell, but I'm just giving you all of this Twitter gold here this morning as my dad and I are still locked out after Hackergate the other day.
I don't understand it.
Well,
free us.
You said yesterday it was zen, so let's see what it's like in 2 weeks.
Now it's hell. Today it's hell.
Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo. Sit with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and we're a week away at this point, a little less than a week away from what is supposed to be the beginning of the Major League Baseball season. But there are still plenty of questions that need to be answered. So to help us with that, we'll hop over to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, where we're joined by ESPN Major League Baseball insider Jeff Passan. Jeff Passan, first and foremost, we've been talking this morning trying to figure out where the Nationals are going to play, as it now looks like they may not be able to play in Washington. What's the latest on that situation, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out, too, because I'm supposed to be at that game, and I have no idea where to go. I don't know if I'm going to be going to Washington. I don't know if I'm going to be going to Fredericksburg, Virginia. I don't know if I'm going to be going to Florida. And, you know, it's only like 6 days away from the first baseball game of the season. So it's just such a 2020 situation, right?
let's hope you're not going to Florida. I mean, that would be crazy to go there. And I mean, along those lines, Toronto having the same issues. I know they're on the road against Tampa Bay, but I think 5 days into the new season, they're going to be at home. Do we have any updates on that situation?
The update there is that there is no definitive update at this point. They have permission from the city of Toronto and from the province of Ontario to play games at Rogers Center. They do not have federal approval yet at this point, though. The hope, the expectation, of course, is that they're going to get the rubber stamp on that, and that the caveat is that people need to stay at the hotel at Rogers Center and not leave. So Rogers Center is essentially the closest thing that MLB has to like an NBA style bubble. The players, they want to stay there, and the visiting team, they want to stay there too.
We're talking to Jeff Passan, ESPN Major League Baseball insider. And Jeff, follow up on that, because, you know, obviously I split my time, for example, between Connecticut and Tennessee. It was quickly decided with no notice that Tennessee was going to be added to the no travel list to New England, essentially prohibiting anybody from coming up here. Does Major League Baseball have some sort of a plan in place for municipalities that may decide on a second's notice that they're no longer allowing state-to-state travel?
Yeah, it's just the backup sites that they theoretically have. Every team, as part of the protocol, was given a duty to find a backup city to go to. And in the Nationals' case, the backup city was going to be down in Florida at their spring training complex, but Florida's Florida right now, and we know that that's a relatively untenable situation. So That's why they're looking at Fredericksburg, which is their single A affiliate. We may have opening day, the broadcast on ESPN, the first game between the New York Yankees and the Washington Nationals. Max Scherzer versus Garrett Cole in a single A ballpark.
Wow.
Man, that's a lot to take in. By the way, Florida is Florida is an evergreen tweet from Jeff Passan, who joins us here
so
on Golic and Wingo there. That one you can just bookmark for later use. But, Jeff, I guess in all this, it's an example of the virus dictating the terms to the league, because the one thing we had heard talking to Buster Olney was that as players and teams had come back together around their facilities, that people were pleasantly surprised with the level of detail in the plan and how safe it was coming back at the beginning in all this one. Where are teams at now with all that as the ground continues to kind of shift under the feet? What's been the reaction of players, managers, and clubs to everything that's changing leading up to opening day?
It's the same thing. There's just a lot of cognitive dissonance right now, because they're feeling safe because they're getting tested relatively frequently every other day, because they're playing baseball, because they're having inter-squad scrimmages. They feel like they're playing the game, but they understand that the rug can be pulled out from under them at any point, and it is completely out of their control. And that's a hard thing to get used to, knowing that you're doing everything right personally, and yet you have no agency in this situation. It's up to other people, and not just other people inside of baseball, but other people literally in the world. The fans are dictating everything at this point, because people's ability to try and stay healthy is everything. And if they're incapable of doing that, and local, state, or even federal government say, we're going to be shutting this thing down, there is absolutely nothing that you as a baseball player or as an organization can do about it.
Jeff, in any sport, after every season, there's change on a team. Normally there's some change. In this season, when only 37% of the regular season games are going to be played, 60 games, how much do you think it will affect teams that say, you know what, this is a throwaway year, so we're just going to kind of keep rolling next year how we roll this year and won't make many changes?
I think there are a couple of fears. The first one is that the season can just stop at any time, right? Like, it's out of your control. And so, because it's out of your control and can stop at any time, you don't know how much energy and effort to put into it. The second part of it, though, is if a season can be played in full, a championship is still a championship. You still have to go, and if you're a wild card team, win the wild card game, the division series, the league championship series, and then the World Series. If you win your division, you still have to win the DS, the CS, and the World Series. And I think that a ring this year is not going to have a huge asterisk on it, because you have to run through this playoff gauntlet that you do in all the other years. It's easier to get there. It's easier for teams that aren't as good to take advantage of this small sample size season, but you still got to win those games. And because of that, it's this very delicate balancing act that I don't think teams really know how they're going to handle. They don't know if it's August 28th and they're in first place and they need an outfielder, whether it's worth it to go and trade a prospect for the best player on the market. Like, this is something that I think is going to be determined in real time. And man, it is a difficult thing to determine, because it's almost like a Mookie Betts situation. The Dodgers gave up Alex Verdugo and Jeter Downs to go get a year of Mookie Betts, and they don't know if they're going to get 60 games in a playoff run out of him, or if they're going to have given away two young players for complete naught. The same thing can be said for anyone who tries to make a trade in August. The season could end instantaneously at the snap of fingers in September, and they'll have no recourse for it.
We're talking to ESPN Major League Baseball insider Jeff Passan. Jeff, you've mentioned the season could stop at any time with no recourse. Short of the government coming in and saying, hey, you can't play baseball, where is the line that would shut down the season?
There is no line that is drawn in the sand, Jason. And that's the confusing part about it, the teams. You know, it's up to Rob Manfred, essentially. Rob Manfred has the mandate and the ability to shut down a season at any point, but he has not said, nor has anyone at Major League Baseball, that this is going to be where I shut down the season. If, you know, one team gets a dozen coronavirus cases and can't field a representative and competitive squad, is that going to be it? Is it going to take multiple teams? How exactly is this whole thing going to be determined? They don't know. And that's another layer of confusion that's added to this whole thing.
Jeff, as we talk about added layers of confusion, let's throw in a tweet from Alex Rodriguez this morning in a situation that's become a little interesting here. A-Rod took some heat yesterday for calling for players to accept a type of revenue sharing system, but as he pointed out, he never said the word salary cap in all this one. He's already spoken to Tony Clark, so what is the current status of A-Rod's perception now as he is still in the running to maybe purchase the Mets?
I think every owner that heard that said, yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, Alex Rodriguez is talking like an owner now. And the reason that it angered the players so much is because A-Rod may have been the greatest beneficiary of all to an uncapped system. Like, let's remember, when Alex Rodriguez signed his $252 million deal with the Texas Rangers, it more than doubled the greatest contract in size in baseball history previously. And to think that something like that could and would have happened in an cap system, it's just not realistic. It would have been a much shorter jump from salary to salary than from Mike Hampton to him. So, listen, I get why he says something like that. It certainly plays into the idea of being an owner and of what ownership perspective is. I personally just don't agree with it at all. And the idea that a former player would say it is why it didn't sit so well with the MLBPA, because they felt like, hey, you of all people should know that an uncapped system is what's best for baseball players. And even if you do want to be an owner, being a player-friendly owner is better than the alternative.
Jeff, if there's one thing I know you got to be at the first game. Just wear two hazmat suits, like one on top of each other, and stay safe. That's the most important thing. If you could double up on the hazmats, send that out to social media. It'd be a viral sensation, I'm telling you. We appreciate you joining us. Stay safe, my friend. Stay healthy, and thanks so much.
Did you just say a viral situation? Was that a
sensation? I'm glad somebody got it. I'm glad somebody got it.
I wasn't listening.
Foul. Yeah. Two shots.
Jeff, that was one of my best.
No,
come on.
That wasn't. No. Thanks, Jeff. I'm sorry you had to deal with that.
I am utterly ashamed of you, honestly. No.
You and my mom. There we go.
Yeah, everybody else out here, too.
I mean, what happened to the nice shot, good putt, good hit, guys? Like,
told you that doesn't exist here. Love don't live here anymore, Fitz.
Wow. I'm hurt. Go Look and Wingo, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer, changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Coming up, what's the Elam ending and why the NBA should adopt it?
Love of the show. You ready? Everything has nuance. Nothing happens in black and white. See, Bubba's going to hate me again, but I think there's nuance here. You guys have to embrace the nuance in life. Wait, hold on. There's two questions there. Life is not black and white. It's mostly gray.
Just answer the question.
No. Well, which one do you want me to answer? You're loving it. You're loving
it. You love it or shove it. It's a statement, and then you love it or shove it. This is the first time playing.
No, it's not, and it should probably be the last time playing.
Go Look and Wingo is brought to you by Goodyear. Goodyear believes movement drives us forward, and they believe in the importance of a pit stop. Sometimes that's all it takes, a moment to pause before we all start moving again. So as you get ready for the road ahead, Goodyear's here to help. Visit Goodyear.com to learn more. Goodyear, more driven.
Go Look and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers. Presented by Progressive Insurance, Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic. Mike Golic Jr., and it's time to do a little loving and shoving, right?
Absolutely. Bubba, you there?
What's up, boys?
Yeah, let's get to it, my friend.
I see Fitz is back. I guess we'll do it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wow.
2 weeks in a row. Great. All right. Love it or shove it. Brought to you by Granger, despite Jason. Deshaun Watson should have been ranked higher in Madden. Love it or shove it.
Yeah, so this one's interesting. Patrick Mahomes obviously led the pack at 99. Russell Wilson behind him at 97. Lamar Jackson, 94. Deshaun Watson all the way down in an 86 in that one, behind Drew Brees, Tom Brady, wow, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Ryan, just ahead of Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott.
It might be a little low, but he doesn't have DeAndre Hopkins this year. So I think his stats are going to take a bit of a hit. So for that reason, I'm going to shove it.
I am going to love it that he should have been ranked higher, because you're right. I think his stats are going to take a hit. But in theory, the Madden rankings are supposed to be about how good that player is, just their physical elements, not the things that are around them. So in theory, Madden shouldn't be accounting for the lack of weapons or the fact that Bill O'Brien seems to be a moron when it comes to running a football team. So as a result, I think Deshaun Watson's way too talented to be where he is. I love it. He should be higher.
Yeah, I think Deshaun should be higher on this one. I think Deshaun Watson's, probably pretty consistently in that conversation for a top five quarterback in the league as far as what he's been able to do. And as you mentioned, at times it's been in spite of his protection, in spite of things that have gone on,
right,
as Will Fuller, and they've dealt with injuries in that situation, how different that offense can be at times. The one consistent through line and the one thing that's really elevated them has been Deshaun Watson.
I guess I like him a lot, but I guess I'm going on the production value I think will drop. Bubba, what's next?
Jorge Masvidal will get his immediate rematch with Kamaru Usman. Love it or shove it.
I mean, I definitely love this. He had short notice last time. He came out fast in round one, and then he just wore down. That's just the way it went, and it went to a unanimous decision. Usman controlled the fight, so I'd love to see Masvidal get that fight, train for that fight, be ready for that fight to see what happens next time. I love it.
I'm going to shove it, although I do love the opportunity to get the rematch, but let's face it, Usman, stylistically, a little bit of a boring fighter, right? So the opportunity that UFC's looking at to put Masvidal, who is currently a rock star, that sort of caught everybody's attention, up against Conor McGregor is a bigger payday. Money wins, so I think that they look for McGregor, Masvidal to come next.
I think it's going to be interesting. Actually, it could involve neither of the two names that you just mentioned here, because a lot of people look at Kamaru Usman and say Gilbert Burns, the guy he was supposed to face in all this, might actually be stylistically a fight that would bring out some of the better, more exciting versions of Usman we've seen in the past and be a better fight. So I'll shove this one and say that we might be closer to that match with Burns that we were supposed to get to begin with.
All right, Bubba.
All right. I wouldn't mind stomping on Jason's toes a few times, if you know what I mean.
Wait, are you saying you want to slow dance with me, Bubba? It's a social distancing time. We can't do that.
I'm sorry. It's Love It or Shove It, Golic Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. The NBA should adopt the Elam ending. Love It or Shove It.
So the Elam ending, again, at the end of the half or game with 4 minutes left, they don't use a clock anymore to control the game. Whatever the score is, they add a number to that score, and first one of that number wins. It happened to be in the basketball tournament that where they use it. Both teams were at 70 at that point, so the first one to 78. But no clock, so it doesn't turn into a fouling, free throw shooting, possession-changing situation. You can just play. I love it. I love the ending of that, or some variation of the ending of that. I would love that to be in the NBA.
I'm with you. I love everything about it. I love the excitement of it. I hate how long it takes to get to the last few minutes. Plus, in the world that we're in now where people pay attention to so many things, if you get to the Elam ending of a big game, it's going to be all over social. Everybody's going to immediately tune in. It gives destination viewing. I love it for the NBA.
It went really well at the All-Star game this year. I feel like now that it has a name that we can all point to and say the Elam ending, and it encompasses the difficult explanation we dealt with around the All-Star weekend, we're good to go now. Bubba?
Tiger will win a tournament and pass Sam Snead in 2020 for the all-time PGA Tour mark. Love it or shove it.
I think I'm going to love this because I want it to happen. You know, we saw the magic of the Masters when he won that one lately. I think he could pull one more out. I don't know if it'll be a major, but I think he'll get another tournament and pass Sam Snead. So I love it.
Yeah, I'd love this one too. I think law of averages in this one. I can count on him. Maybe again winning a major, winning the Masters again like he did. We know the complications with that because of the schedule. But if you're telling me a guy who's still a very good golfer can win one of the many tournaments we're going to see, I'm going to love that one.
Yeah, I also love it. I was so wrong about his ability to win the Masters that I don't want to be that wrong again. And people don't view you wrong when you're on the pro side of Tiger, so let's go. I love it.
Bubba, take us home.
All right. Love it or shove it. Brought to you by Granger. As you get back to business, Granger is there to help. with supplies and solutions for every industry, safety recovery guides, 24/7 support, and more. Visit Grainger.com/recovery.
We love you, Bubba, and Grainger loves you, Bubba.
Absolutely, they sure do.
Jason, not so much.
Yeah, no.
See
Jason,
you, Mike. See you, Mike. Goodbye, Jason.
I adore you, Bubba, and all things that are Bubba related. I don't know why Bubba, he feels threatened by my manhood. That's why I figure, like, I'm such a man's man that.
I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah, I think we need to go back to the toe stomping idea. That seems like the right way to go.
All right, coming on, Zion has left the NBA bubble, but for how long? We'll get to that next. Go look and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. I still love Bubba. I don't care what anybody says.